This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Once a year, many towns across New England invite all the registered voters to come together in a gym or a meeting hall to discuss issues, ask questions, and vote on taxes and budgets. The town meeting is direct democracy in action, a signature of American political life. But for many, it's become too much of a hassle. 2 weeks ago, Guilford, New Hampshire voted to end its annual open town meeting after 192 years, and it's hardly alone. Over the past decade, dozens of towns in New England have made the same decision. In fact, interest and participation in local government is in decline across the country. In a couple of minutes, we'll talk about why and what can be done to fix it. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or send us email, totn@npr.org. But first joining us is Peter Millam, the moderator of Guilford, New Hampshire's town meeting for the past 32 years. He joins us on the phone from his home in Guilford, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
Can you describe, for those of us who've never been to a New England town meeting, what it's like?
Well, it's like a get-together of the people in the town, at which time we vote on the a number of articles that have been announced ahead of time and determine what the budget will be and what ordinances are going to be voted upon.
And I assume everybody from around the town gets up and has their say?
Those that want to. Some want to more than others.
And some want to on more issues than others.
Yeah, some people like to hear themselves talk.
Indeed. That happens outside of New England as well, I'm told. Given that, it sounds pretty idyllic. Why stop having them?
Well, I think that the frustration comes from the fact that the people can stay at home and watch television. They have children to take care of. Older people don't like to come out at night, and it's just, you know, it's an effort to come out to town meeting.
Well, how many usually show up?
We usually have about 400.
Out of how many voters?
Out of a little over 4,000.
Oh, that's not a great turnout, though.
That's not a great turnout. It's consistent, though, I think, through the larger towns. Pretty hard to get. If we had a 50% turnout, we wouldn't have a hall big enough to hold them all.
Well, other than the fact that television exists and, you know, there's of course, wonderful radio programs to listen to, too, why is it that people don't show up?
Well, I don't know. I personally favor the town meeting, but I think in general we have people who are, of course, in Florida in the winter, and it's an effort to show up, and the people who do show up are the people who generally are interested in town affairs.
New Hampshire is there's been a big influx of people from out of state moving into New Hampshire. Are there a lot of people in town who might not recognize the long tradition of these town meetings?
Oh, I suppose that's so, but you can't live here for very long and not appreciate that that's where the decisions are made. And if you want to participate in the decisions, you better be there.
Is a town meeting, after all this time, do you think it's an effective form of government?
I think it's effective if, you know, if the people participate, it's effective. If they don't, it's not.
Yeah, well, that could be true of anything.
Yeah.
What's going to happen now, and do you think it will be more effective?
I personally don't think it will be more effective. The new system that the legislature authorized, though, probably maybe close to 10 years ago now, involves having a town meeting in late January at which the articles and the warrant are discussed, and then people can make amendments to them. And then they're posted, and the actual vote takes place at the town election in March. So the history has been that towns that have this kind of arrangement, the number of people turning up for the discussion meeting is usually pretty small. Like if we usually would have 400 people turn up for town meeting, maybe 50 to 100 would turn up for the discussion meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that has the effect that you can have a small group through the amendment process change what everybody else has to vote for or on.
And that can cause problems of its own, obviously.
That could cause problems.
After 100 and all this time, do you think you've lost something?
Yes, I think we've lost something in that we, you know, we're losing more and more times when people get together. You can look at, we don't have a dump anymore, we don't have the pot stove, we don't have some of the clubs around. And the town meeting is a time when the people in the town can come out and they can talk with one another, see how their families are doing and so on, even though they don't agree with each other on many of the articles that are coming up.
Well, some people would say that's the point. It's a rare opportunity these days to get up and stand and talk to people who don't agree with you.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's get a call in. This is Barnett, and Barnett joins us on the line from Provincetown, Massachusetts.
Hi there.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make a quick comment. I'm on a local board, and Provincetown still holds town meetings, as you're referring to, and ours is packed to the gills. We actually require that people who attend the meeting on the floor be registered voters because there's so many people we don't have room for them. And I didn't realize until I became a board member in town how easy it is to get involved in local politics and make a difference. I think, you know, there are huge issues before us as a nation right now, and everybody has an opinion. And I didn't realize how easy it is to get involved in local politics, and certainly the town meeting is one way, but whether you have one or not, you can make a difference in a very easy way by joining a board, by being a participant in a town meeting, you know, by getting involved in an issue that you believe in. And I would just encourage people to look at the possibility of what they can do if they're willing to put forth a little bit of effort.
As I'm sure, Barnett, you've heard instances like that in Guilford of towns deciding to drop these town meetings. Why do you think the one in Provincetown is thriving, as you describe it?
I don't know. Provincetown is a little different than the majority of the rest of the world, and everybody most definitely has an opinion on any item from a large one to a small one in town. Everybody has an opinion and is quite willing to share it. And discourse is really sort of upheld and looked forward to there, as you were referring to. It is a chance to hear somebody else's opinion. You may agree or disagree, but I believe it's one of the best ways to firm up your belief in your argument. If you hear the other side, you either are going to feel stronger about the way you feel, or you may learn something you didn't know. But if you only hear people that agree with you 100%, you're never going to get the full picture. And I think that's one of the things the town meeting can do. It gets a little bogged down and a little crazy at times, but it gives you an opportunity to sort of flesh out your own feelings and hear someone else's about an opinion, about an item, you know, that's coming up.
Well, Barnett, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Peter Millam, I guess there are certainly some places in New England where this is still alive.
Well, I'm happy to hear that.
Well, thank you for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
Peter Millam has been the moderator of the Guilford, New Hampshire town meeting for the past 32 years. As you heard, Guilford recently voted to abandon its system of government. He joined us from his home in Guilford, New Hampshire. Guilford is hardly the only place in the country where civic engagement is at a discouraging low. And joining us now to shed some light on the national picture is Robert Putnam, a professor of public policy at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, also the author of the books Bowling Alone and Better Together, Restoring the American Community. Bob Putnam, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
So what's the trend? Are we actually less involved in civil life than we were before?
Yeah, I think Peter Millam had it exactly right. I mean, he phrased it better than I could. There are fewer and fewer times when people get together, especially with people who disagree with them. And that's for sure the trend over the last 25 years, at least, in the U.S.,
How do you measure that?
Well, there are a lot of different ways, but one of them is that the Roper Polling Organization has been asking people every month for the last 25 or 30 years a lot of questions about their civic involvement. For example, have you in the last 12 months been to any public meeting where people talked about local affairs, mm-hmm. about town affairs or school affairs. I don't mean just a town meeting as in New England. Just been to any meeting, you know, where people protested about, I don't know, condoms in the high school or whatever.
And there's certainly a city council or town council meetings and yeah, other forms of government.
All sorts of things. And over the last 25 years, the fraction of Americans who say, yes, they have been to such a meeting has been cut in half. And that's true east and west, north and south, big cities and little cities. It's obviously true in Guilford. That's what Peter was reporting to us, and mm-hmm. it's true in Los Angeles. It's true really basically everywhere. And it's not only just going to meetings. It's also, you know, do you spend time with your neighbors? Do you vote? All of these various indicators point in the same direction as, and Peter had the right bottom line, fewer and fewer times when we get together with other people, especially people who disagree with us.
Mm-hmm. So the question, why? We asked Peter, and Peter Milam said, well, you know, people got children to take care of, and they're watching TV.
In Bowling Alone, I tried to explore the possible reasons for this. It's a little bit like the mystery Murder on the Orient Express, in which there are multiple culprits. There's
right.
not just a single culprit.
They all did it.
They all, well, not everything, but yeah, there are a number of culprits, and one of them, Peter actually had exactly right. TV, entertainment television, is a big part of the problem. I don't, certainly not NPR, and even public television, in fact. Watching Jim Lehrer is good for your civic health, but most people in America don't watch the news. Most people watch Friends. Rather than having friends, it seems. And so public, I mean, entertainment television is a big part of the story. Another part of the story is urban sprawl. For example, Boston sprawling up here into New Hampshire, where I am. And there's a very simple rule of thumb. Every 10 minutes more of additional commuting time cuts all forms of civic engagement by 10%. So 10 minutes more commuting time means 10% fewer meetings and 10% fewer clubs and 10% fewer dinner parties and so on.
Is there a generational component?
Yeah, there's a big generational component. The group of Americans who came of age before or during World War II, the what you might call the Pearl Harbor generation or what Tom Brokaw calls the greatest generation, all their lives, statistically speaking, it's my parents' generation, it's the grandparents' generation of a lot of your listeners. That generation, all their lives, were incredibly involved. And as a social statistician, I was amazed when I began to see the data. At every point in their life, they voted more, they joined more, they gave more, they gave more blood, they gave more money, they gave more time. They just didn't pass those habits on to their children, the boomers, and on to their grandchildren. And so a big part of this is generational. Now,
we have an email exactly on that point from Chris Remhoff. I live in Ogle County, Illinois. We have 24 board members. Three of us are in our 20s. I've heard we're the only county of 102 in Illinois with three 20-somethings. Young people can and should run for local office because it's the level of government closest to the people, and you can make a real difference to your community. That's an argument there, but making the point about the other the membership of those other county boards.
Yeah, that's that person is surely right nationwide. There has been a real graying of civic America as older people have not been replaced by younger people, and many places around the country actually are having to cancel local elections because there are not enough candidates to run for office. So it's a significant problem. And the level of, I mean, we're conscious. People talk every 4 years about how voting turnout in the national elections is down, but voting turnout in local elections is down at least as much, and the level of turnout in local elections is way lower than in the federal elections. I mean, voting turnout in local elections nationwide is around about 20-25%. In other words, the 10% of Guilford's population that come to the town meeting actually are doing a pretty amazing job of turning out compared to folks in the rest of the country.
And that's not to say that turnout in federal elections is anything to crow about either.
No.
We're talking about local government and politics. How involved are you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing declining interest and participation in local politics. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. We're speaking right now with Robert Putnam, author of the book Bowling Alone, a professor of public policy at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. And you're on the phone with us from your home in Jaffrey, New Hampshire. I just wonder, relating to our earlier conversation, do you have a town meeting there?
Yeah, we do. I was afraid you were going to ask me that, Neil. We had our town meeting last week, but I just didn't get around to going. I thought about it. It was on my schedule, but I, on the day, didn't get there.
Let's get a caller on the line. Peter's with us from Berkeley, California.
Hi. Well, I want to appreciate the tradition of local town meetings, but say maybe it's high time we get on to global town meetings using our potential with television and radio and the marvelous example you set every day, Neil, and TOTN, all the team. But, I mean, I'm just fired up and excited about applying this at a global level, and I think it's high time and past time that we have at least four of these every year, don't you think?
I'm all for it, and especially the radio ones. But, Robert Putnam, people have tried to marry the technology of radio and television to town meetings and council board meetings, and I feel just as guilty as you did when you skipped the meeting last week every time I flip past the Montgomery County Council meetings on my television.
Yeah, those really haven't worked. I don't mean to be dismissive of Peter's idea of paying attention to global issues in some kind of media facilitated setting, but it isn't the same thing as going down to talk to your folks your neighbors about whether you should or should not buy a new fire truck. That's a different kind of experience. And Lou Feldstein, a colleague of mine, and I were writing this new book, Better Together, we were trying to look for exceptions, places around the country where the trends were going in the opposite direction, and that's hard to do because the trends are basically down. We did discover, however, one fairly large city where the trends are exactly the opposite of the rest of the country, and I thought that was a kind of interesting example.
And what city is that?
It's Portland, Oregon. And in Portland, in the early 1970s, Portland looked just like every place else in America in terms of its rate of participation, going to meetings or belonging to clubs or voting or whatever. But then just as the rest of the country, people were stopped going to meetings and local clubs were expiring and so on, in those very same years, Portland was doubling or tripling its the people in Portland double or tripling their average level of engagement. So at the beginning of the period, Portland looked like anywhere USA, and by the end of the period, everybody else was half as active, and Portland was twice as active as they had been before.
And so, why?
Well, the answers that if you talk to people in Portland, the answers they give you cannot be right. They tell you something about the weather or about the Swedes or something. But it was raining in Portland in 1972 and they were not going out then, so it can't be something that was constant. The other thing they tell you is that it was the 60s and the marches, the peace marches and,
all that activism.
Right, and that also can't be the right answer because they had the 60s. We all had the 60s every place in America, too. I mean, in Toledo and in Los Angeles and in Montgomery County and so on. So it can't be something that was happening everywhere, and it can't be something that was always true of Portland. And we think we discovered that what it involved was a change. This is going to sound a little wonkish, but a change in the structure of Portland government to dramatically decentralize power and give real power and even money to neighborhood councils in Portland. And we think that kind of triggered a process of people getting involved, and then other people deciding they wanted to get involved, and not everybody agreeing with everybody. Absolutely not. A lot of contention and cantankerousness, and so on.
So that overcame to the extent that people feel, well, my participation, my vote doesn't matter. This might tend to overcome that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my point being, thank you very much for that. But my point being, the same phenomenon can occur on a global level, and we better hurry up and apply it and give that opportunity, because when common people can be heard all around the world, it's going to make a fabulous difference and let off a lot of pressure, a lot of frustration. So it's very practical. Anyone that wants to help our Star Alliance Foundation organize such a thing will be happy to do it.
Well, Peter,
call us at 800-DECLARE.
Peter, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Robert Putnam, thanks very much for your time.
Great pleasure. Good to talk with you, Neil.
Robert Putnam is a professor of public policy at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, again on his home, from his home on the phone from Jaffrey, New Hampshire. Joining us is Robert Lang. He's director of the Metropolitan Institute at Virginia Tech. And Robert, we've heard about how trends away from civic involvement are affecting local politics in New England. What about the rest of the country?
Could I also just comment on what Robert Putnam said about Portland? Because I think I could also add something to that.
Sure.
Portland, Oregon also switched to a strange form of growth management using an urban growth boundary. And that growth boundary was something that required a lot of involvement and participation and discussion about the local dynamic, about the local way it would impact the community and impact the neighborhood. For example, it requires, just one for instance, densities that are much higher than they've been in the past. And so you've got homeowners, and you're telling them that down the street we're going to put multifamily housing. And nothing can get homeowners out faster, if they're single-family homeowners, than the description of multifamily housing down the street to you. And I think that might be part of the motivating force in a place like Portland, because the stakes are really quite high. We don't deal with that same issue the same way around the rest of the country.
Particularly in places like Nevada, where there's lots of area left to grow.
Turns out there's almost no area left to grow in Nevada. I call it the land of big skies and small lots. And people live on little postage stamps there, but they don't allow multifamily housing nearby because even though they're growth constrained, the thing around Portland that's keeping the growth in is that they voted themselves this growth constraint. The thing that's keeping Las Vegas growth constrained is that the federal government owns almost all the land surrounding Las Vegas. It's the Bureau of Land Management, and they let it go in little parcels. And when they do, it's highly contested and it's bid upon and so on. But people go in at high density, and they go in single-family homes that have spaces around them so small it's enough for a dog to fit around it.
Well, then, as opposed to the long traditions in places like Guilford, New Hampshire, these places have to basically invent civic involvement.
They do, and they do it through homeowners associations. They do it tend not to do it through municipal government. In fact, they have places in Las Vegas where you might have a couple hundred thousand residents, and the mayor's part-time. The mayor's part-time in part because the governance at the level, the official level of the municipality, can be quite light because people are governing themselves through active homeowners associations.
Well, there's some things that homeowners associations can't do that government can.
They can do almost everything that government can. They close in on just about, you know, filling that gap completely.
Huh.
I mean, they can't arrest people. They don't have police power, and they mostly don't deal with, you know, schools and so on, but a lot of counties deal with that instead.
Right,
and
police
can also
and fire
deal with
too.
Police.
Yeah. So why the shift away from traditional local government infrastructures?
What's interesting is that in the fastest growing parts of this country, you know, the Phoenixes and the Las Vegases, the thing that's really booming are these private associations. And one of the reasons is that they actually help municipal governments because they allow municipal governments to govern lighter. I call it governance without governments, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they do that is they take care of things, for example, just one example. A lot of what governments don't want to get involved in is disputes between neighbors about code enforcement. Like somebody puts a chain link fence up and puts a car up on blocks and so on.
That's the Montagues and the Capulets you're generally talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So what homeowners associations do, problem solved. What they do is they set it up so that if you do that, you sign a covenant up front. You say, I'm never going to do that. And if you do it, it's not that the public realm has to swing into action and fine you or cite you. It's that a private realm swings into action of your neighbors who have this kind of blood oath with you. And what they can do is just on those fines, they can put a lien against your house and toss you out of that house. And the action time that occurs in a homeowners association is scarily fast, so fast and so much faster than government, that the Arizona state legislature is right now considering legislation to give people a 3-year buffer period where they can't be foreclosed on because there are these horror stories of it happening in an instant. Well, that's the kind of thing that can make sure that you never have a car up on blocks. And for the municipal government, the reality is that's one less thing they have to get themselves involved in. And they can have a smaller staff, and they can have a smaller presence in the community.
All right, let's get another caller on the line. Angela joins us from Santa Clara, California.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a comment. I've been trying to get public awareness up about a local community issue here in Santa Clara, and I found a lot of people were involved very early on when the city was holding public hearings, and they made their voice very clear, and the planning department also made its voice very clear, reflecting what the public wanted. But when it came to the city council, they voted in the opposite direction. And so now the public is all saying, we give up because they're not listening to us.
Well, isn't the recourse to go out and vote against those council members next time they come up for election?
Well, next time they come up, but it's going to what the issue is going to be long gone by then.
So the issue is not going to be remembered by the voters, is what you're suggesting?
Well, the issue may be remembered. However, this is kind of an issue that involves a historical property that is the city council wants to see developed, and the public that have all shown up at these meetings have all said no.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that is an issue. But the question, you know, people who want to be involved, see, they're just being slapped down by a city council that's not responding.
I wonder if we get a response. Robert, do you think?
Yeah, that is actually a problem in that sometimes citizens get energized for a single issue, and it's a kind of a one-shot deal, and they come out and they have faith, hopefully faith in people to respond to that and then to take action. And the reality is that if that issue goes away, that you're leaving in place people who are there for several years, and they might find that's not that pressing an issue and move on to something else.
Yet, Angela, these council members were elected to be representatives of the community. They're not. You know, it's not a direct democracy. It's a representative democracy, and people are electing them to do the right thing. Obviously, issues come up during the course of their tenure.
Right.
So they're, you know, they may not be responding to the people there in the hall, but they may be responding to what they regard as this is the right thing to do.
Well, they may be, but any community meeting, city council meeting that they're being held, the overwhelming number of voices have been in opposition to what they're saying.
Okay.
So the question becomes, what do you do at the local meeting? So.
Well, better luck next time, Angela.
Thanks.
Appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Robert, we're talking about this trend towards, away from local government. Why not just get rid of it altogether?
Well, there's a good reason not to get rid of it altogether. And just look recently in terms of something like civil rights and enfranchisement of people. Municipal governments are often the place where minority interests get represented because a minority interest can capture the scale of a municipality. For example, you could be better represented in San Francisco or in another city where there's a higher gay percentage in the population
mm-hmm.
that you would then have gay marriages. And it can force onto the national agenda, an issue such as gay marriage. And if you look at the history of enfranchisement, there's lots of cases where municipalities took the lead.
And these municipalities have taken the lead, but obviously one of the reasons people say that they're a little discouraged with local government is the amount of time some local governments spend on ancillary issues, foreign policy, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, one of the reasons the rise of private governments, has occurred is that there's a very pragmatic, self-interested element of the private governance. It's set up to get people energized on very specific things concerning, actually, their home value, which is the most important thing. I'll give you just one for instance on this. The mayor of North Las Vegas, Nevada, told me that he reluctantly became homeowners association president when he started his career in politics, which is very common out west.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all the neighbors came to him and said, look, you're the only one that really has any sense of how to do this, so why don't you please do this? For the first 7 years he was in it, it was a brand new development. Nobody was really selling their houses. They were mostly families with starter homes. And they started to get lax in code enforcement. And then people wanted to go and sell their houses. And he told me that he used to go out and try to get people to come to meetings. And the first several years, nobody came. Then people started to sell their houses, and suddenly it was packed because this neighbor didn't do that and that neighbor didn't do that, and it was affecting their house value and so on. And there's a tradition in this country of very pragmatic self-interest and engagement at that level where you get involved because your interests are at stake. And in the case of a house, your interests are probably your highest value, and it's something that you can't move the house. It's not hedged against devaluation if somebody does something erratic like start an appliance collection in their backyard. So you're stuck with having to say, well, what can I do in my environment to ensure that there's no infringement on this? And that's when a lot of people just swing into action.
Robert Lang, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Lang, director of the Metropolitan Project at Virginia Tech, author of the book Edgeless Cities. He was with us from his office in Virginia, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Charles Lyons. He's president of the National League of Cities, superintendent of the Shawshene Technical School District, and a selectman from Arlington, Massachusetts. He joins us now on the phone from his office in Billerica. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to hear from you, Neil.
We've been hearing a lot about a decline of public interest in local governance. Are you worried?
I don't think so. I think the the talk of our demise, I think, as Mark Twain said, is greatly over-exaggerated. There are about 20,000 local governments in the United States of America. It's the bedrock of our American ideals and our American democracy. And city councilors and mayors and selectmen all over this country are fundamentally providing most of the services that the public not only demands but deserves to have. Services like, educating children and making sure the streets are safe.
And I think we all understand that, but nevertheless, you look at the numbers, and voting is down, number of people running for office is down, people who participate in meetings is down.
I think one of the, I was listening attentively a few minutes ago to your prior guests, and I do think there has been a trend, particularly over the last 15 years, that has forced many communities to become more segregated along racial and economic lines. I mean, the two fastest growing types of communities in the United States are communities of concentrated poverty and communities that are considered gated in nature. And if there is one trend that the National League of Cities and I, are talking about this year, is this is a trend that sort of, is against the kind of American values, the concept of the melting pot. And so we've seen that trend, and because we've seen an exacerbation of people being segregated along racial and economic lines into communities and actually separated by boundaries, mostly the academic scholars will say that that lack of political cohesiveness has brought about a lessening of Americans to be engaged, let's say, in the grassroots political activities, and that's a concern for all of us.
Indeed, but speaking from the level of local government, as you say, the most immediate level of government that most of us deal with, and one that deals with, if there's a pothole in the street, that's who we turn to. How do you propose that more people get engaged?
Well, the first thing I think we've got to do as Americans is have a discussion about what the level playing field is all about. I mean, we've got 43 million Americans going to work every day. Most of them, 80% of them, go to work, don't have health insurance. We have some pretty basic needs which aren't being met. We need to have a new discussion about what's the appropriate role of government to play.
Is that the appropriate role for local government, do you think, national health?
I think so. Well, I think so because it affects us all at a local level. I mean, if somebody doesn't have health insurance, they don't go away. They end up at the local hospital, or they end up in the local ambulance, or they end up, it's not something that's just wished away because the federal government is not being responsive, or state governments, many of whom have become bankrupt over the last couple of years, aren't able to provide those services. Those citizens don't go away. When a terrorist strikes, the first phone call goes to 911, to City Hall and the local police station.
Charlie, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Can we continue this conversation in a couple of minutes?
Sure.
We're going to have to take a short break. We'll follow up with Charlie Lyons when we come back from a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about flagging interest in local politics and flagging participation in same. Our guest right now is Charlie Lyons, president of the National League of Cities, superintendent of the Shawsheen Technical School District, a selectman from Arlington, Massachusetts. And let's get a caller in on the conversation. And joining us now is Colleen, who joins us from East Lyme, Connecticut.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just calling to let you... Now that I just didn't appreciate how important local government was until I started reporting for a weekly newspaper for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was often the only person sitting there in the audience as the selectmen were making really important decisions about what was going on in town. And I, one of the things that I did notice as a reporter was how much people appreciated local news. And we had a weekly newspaper that I helped to start, and by focusing on one town and really going in-depth on the news and being able to get into not just the issue, but who's on what side of the issue, the who's who, the politicians and everything, I think people became quite a bit more informed and more interested in what was going on in town government. If all you have is the legal notice that has the town call, the meeting call on it, people aren't going to get engaged in it in the same way.
It's interesting. We had an email on that same subject from Megan who says we're influenced more and more by national media. Town meetings are not only more time-consuming to attend, she writes, but the results seem less relevant if only because we can't see them later on CNN.
Well, you know, I think I think your point, Colleen, though, is the democratic process is a deliberate process. It's never been prone to quickness, and technology today is cutting us all used to instant gratification. And the process is deliberate because government set up at the local level, not necessarily to protect the rights of. I think I've heard somebody from Santa Clara say that the city council didn't necessarily vote in favor of what neighbors wanted for something, but local government is set up to protect the rights of the minority, and that's a fundamental principle that we believe in this country, that in order to have a level playing field, we're a government of laws, and we're not a government of men, and we're not a government of mob rule. And most of the local officials that I've worked with in the last 32 years take their responsibilities very seriously. And their sole desire is to leave their community and their place necessarily better off than the one they inherited. And I think overall, the responsiveness of local officials are more timely than, let's say, the responsiveness of state officials or even federal officials. Mm-hmm. The more you get away from City Hall or from filling those potholes or making sure those streetlights are turned on or making sure there's a certified teacher in front of the classroom, the less responsive government seems to be.
Absolutely. The other thing I noticed as I was reporting on it was when we would be at these meetings and there would be a huge turnout of people who were on one side of an issue, and they didn't look at they would feel like they weren't being heard because the vote didn't necessarily go their way. But there was a bigger issue or there was a bigger constituency that had to be addressed.
Yeah. I wonder, Colleen, you said you got interested in this when you were writing, covering local politics for a local newspaper.
Yeah.
Are you still doing that?
No, actually, I'm home with my babies now. But
well, and now that you're home with the babies, have you ever been back to the town meeting?
No, actually, it makes it a little bit tough to get out, unfortunately. But I do plan to stay involved, and I'm involved in a volunteer organization that's part of a downtown revitalization effort.
Well, good luck with that.
Well, thank you so much.
Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Charlie Lyons, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil.
Charlie Lyons, again, a president of the National League of Cities. He joined us by phone from his home in Billerica, Massachusetts.